I will show you many pyramids, all of which are houses of great light and learning. You will never look at life in the same way again, I can promise you." This turned out to be an accurate prediction. "Haven?" I inquired. "What a TMS that? Oh, I am sorry. I have not yet introduced you to a dear old friend, Haven, light of my life, our home planet. You would have seen it on the Knowledge Viewer. Perhaps it was referred to as Atom Nirvana TM. Sometimes the language mix is confusing even for us." Xena was indeed becoming more than a tutor as we discussed more and more personal things between us. Her desire to know the earthly way of life was just as keen as my desire to know of hers. The family unit was of most interest to her because they have no real parents on Haven. Their early life is as adopted children. Now, there TMS nothing wrong with this as such, but even those on Earth have a desire to seek out their real parents at some stage in their lives. With Xena, this was not possible because a machine was responsible for her birth. I explained to her that even with a close association with the near TMS children, they were still capable of surprising you with their abilities. Xena, however, had cause for concern. She might well become the first real mother their race has seen for many thousands of years. Her interest was also in the relationship of marriage. I tried to explain it but found to my surprise that it was difficult to put into words. Yet I felt that Xena loved all with a gentleness that we could not understand or even live up to. I moved the topic back to that of Haven and her childhood. It was amazing to find that she could remember back to almost her first days. As is usual practice, Haven children are given out to their foster homes when they are approximately 1 year old, by which time they can communicate reasonably well and are just starting to levitate. "I think that is why our growing stations want to get rid of us," she said with a smile on her face, "and is perhaps the most trying time for our new families as well." Xena TMS foster parents lived right on the water at TMS Edge, next to one of the three large seas. Her love for the water was evident by the stories she told of her early years there. They had NTMT developed sailing boats on Haven because with their mind power, they did NTMT need to make use of the wind, but Xena had played around in boats of their own design right through her growing years. Even now she loved to sit out on the water during days of stillness, just to clear her mind. I knew exactly what she meant, having done the same thing numerous times myself. A spark was lit within me, perhaps we were not so different after all. I then told her of my early years and how EATMD developed a passion for sailing. Xena spoke about their schooling, which was more an individual type of tutoring, or at least it was in small groups of about four. The same tutor or tutors stay with them for many years. Their school years number about 30, but learning as on Earth goes on all throughout their lives. Their knowledge span is immense. Her family unit included a brother of approximately the same age, and a slightly older sister whom I never met because she was stationed on another transporter which was not due back until long after my own return to Earth. Before I could ask any more questions, Xena had a request of her own. "We would very much like to conduct several tests, but these must be done with your full cooperation. If you have any doubts or queries, we will be pleased to explain. There is no pressure here, you must know this. There are wave patterns within you which we would like to monitor. These are similar to what you may understand as brain waves. Also, mitosis cell division counts are important to us at this time in our studies. Yours are of particular interest, and we would wish to see if there has been any variation in these counts since you have been with us in your altered state. There would be no danger involved with any of these tests and they would be of tremendous help to us in our research." "Well, okay," I said rather hesitantly, my mind going back to all the worst sci-fi movies I had ever seen. As it turned out, my fears were ill-founded. All I had to do was sit in a special chair which was fitted with a wraparound headrest. Their technicians commenced the procedure and positioned the headrest. It was tight, fitting around the head and came well forward just above my ears. They then proceeded to show me a range of flashing pictures. I have no memory of what they were about, or whether they were projected onto a screen or placed directly in my head. How long this went on, I do not know. I'm not sure if they took a blood sample, but they did put one of my fingers into a tube, like a fair for a time while the pictures were being shown. I've included another note about these tests in Appendix 1. Zena did not discuss the outcome of these tests, other than to say that the elders would judge the results. She said she would pass on anything of interest that came out of them at some later date. In any case, our subsequent discussions were to have a dramatic effect on both our lives in the not too distant future. Chapter 8. A World Between Dimensions. I regarded receiving each new update as a compliment, for it must have meant either they trusted me or consider I was intelligent enough to assimilate this material. This next update seemed to suggest the reasons for their interest in the Earth were far more complex than I was led to believe in the beginning. Zena seemed to have a confession to make, not that she worked it as such. She suggested that if I made myself comfortable once again, she would tell me a story of foolish endeavor. First, she asked me to recall the recent explanation of the differences between my original vibrational plane and theirs, and how that level had been raised so that I could interact with them on an equal level. That is only half of what we can do, she explained. There was a time, you see, a long time ago, when a group of very restless people wanted more than they had. They were very intelligent for their age and evolutionary development. They soon mastered the art of space travel in its basic concept. That was easy for them, but they wanted more. They were also keen to master the art of time travel, but to master that art in the form they wanted required that they alter something about themselves. Indeed, this something OTM was their actual physical make-up, their vibrational energy. This change would have come naturally with time had they waited for it. But these people were impatient in the extreme. They decided they would force the change artificially. What I am saying here is they were about to force the pace of evolution synthetically, something that had possibly never been done before in the history of their universe. As it turned out, there were very good reasons why others had not attempted this feat. However, at this point in their development, they were confident in their wisdom that they could achieve this goal. Events were set in motion to achieve this goal, Zena continued. Once started, they could not be stopped. The situation could be compared in a very simplistic way to set a large boulder in motion atop a very steep mountain slope. Forces were involved here that might describe as awesome and yet at the same time microscopically subtle. What they were trying to do was change their very reality, their plane of existence. They wanted to change from what you currently know as a three-dimensional hard interface reality into the fourth or next higher dimension. This next reality is in fact only very slightly different from your own, but it is a softer, airier plane where objects can intermix more easily. There is not so much of your world at TMS hard line boundaries, especially as far as body form is concerned. Also, time can be stretched more easily in this domain. By this I mean that time travel is less harsh on biological entities and is achieved with fewer of the nasty side effects your people are about to have to contend with. This people knew all this before they attempted conversion. Alas, premature conversion of non-biological entities had sighed. Effects they had not foreseen and are paying for to this very day. As I mentioned before, these people were very advanced technically, and they did indeed succeed in transmuting themselves out of their three-dimensional reality. There was more to it than that, however, for they also needed a place to live, a planet that vibrated in a like resonance to themselves. It was not beyond them technically to alter their existing planet, and this is what they set about doing. To keep harmony and balance in their solar system, they decided that the sun would need to be subtly changed, but their wisdom was not so great as to realize the sum total of the effects upon their old system when they projected themselves out of it and into other realms of existence. They envisaged that just the shadow or non-physical portion of their planet would be projected into this new domain, but this was not what ultimately happened. Their main problem was that they did not quite get over to the fourth or next balanced dimensional plane, at least not the one where natural evolution would have sent them. They became trapped in a halfway house, call it dimension 3.5. They had now solved their time travel problems, but at what costs? They could not interact with other life forms as they used to, and they were now living in a world or density occupied by no one. For some reason, this meant that natural evolution passed them by. They stopped evolving, and could only watch as other groups and races changed densities and evolved about them. The artificial change in the density level of their planet had somehow caused an imbalance in the rate of energy their sun was receiving from other sources. This in turn accelerated the solar TMS rate to decline, making it age much faster than it should have. They were now trapped in their custom designed planet with a sun that was going out on them, and it appeared that there was nowhere for them to go. Then someone remembered a beautiful planet far off in a distant part of the cosmos which they could access using their time travel technology. This planet was not yet in fourth dimensional resonance, but from their studies they believed it was soon to become so. It was a planet whose people were not that far removed from themselves, thanks to their early explorers at EM tinkering with genetics. Yes, they had traveled to that planet in the distant past. So they came up with a great plan. What if they could backtrack their evolutionary cycle just a little and retrace their steps? What if they could reintroduce into their population some of this original DNA? These genes were seeded upon this planet by ancient explorers who at that time had not gone through the dimensional changes that now dog their race. These genetic blueprints were still carried by some of the natives on that special planet called Terra. If they could mix the old with the new and deprogram themselves in some way, then there was a chance they could survive on the planet long enough to be there when the expected evolutionary leap occurred, a leap that would take them where TheaTMD wanted to go many long years before. You will know by now that this is my very own people I am discussing here, Xena suggested. It is our dream, our goal, but we would need the help, understanding and cooperation of your people before we could even achieve it, Alec. I did not know if the last part of Xena TMS story was asking a question or presenting a plea. If it were either, there was very little that I, one solitary citizen from planet Earth out of a population of some 5.5 billion or so, could do to help the cause, except perhaps present their case to you in an unbiased manner. If, at some later date, you were to encounter this very same topic and had a chance to lend your weight in some way in any related decision making, you would at least have some honest facts before you to help with that ultimate decision. Xena continued with a rather depressing description of present day Haven. They were rapidly reverting to being the underground race, or at least one that only came out at night, from which their ancient ancestors supposedly developed. The population was determined not to become prisoners on their own planet, a planet which, not so long ago, must have been very much like our own Earth. According to Xena, it once had vegetation similar to our own, and very little desert area. The sun they had inherited or manipulated, EATMM not quite sure which is the correct interpretation, was now nearing the end of its useful life. It's radical and soon, too, become violent pulsations would eventually put an end to their planeta TMS ability to support biological life forms. A problem which Xena TMS people would now have to address if they were to establish themselves on any planet larger than Haven was the gravity factor. Haven is a tiny globe even by Earth TMS standards. Its gravity is approximately half to 1/3 of Earth TMS and its atmospheric pressure is also lower, although I do not know the exact factor. Xena TMS ancestors were an ancient race, and in those distant days they were stronger and more resilient than now. Haven was not their ancestral home planet, but one they moved to when some catastrophe befell this other planet. According to Xena, this was so many years ago that records of such a move are long since lost to them. This factor, however, has been the catalyst for many a story or myth growing among her people. One of the more accepted of these stories is featured Chapter 14. In our own Earth TMS solar system, planets like Mars or even the Earth TMS present moon appealed because of their size, despite the Earth being far more luxuriant. The main reason Xena TMS ancestors eventually had to tolerate Earth at TMS gravity was to help establish intelligent life on our planet. Some of our scientific investigators have doubted that any extraterrestrial race would wish to colonize a planet like Mars while a sparkling jewel such as the Earth was so closed. In part this is true, she said, but surely they must realize that Mars was not always as it is today, that is with low density atmosphere and very little water. To some degree they miss the point, for what do they know of our reasons for seeking Mars in the first place? For one, you should know that we seek our own past, just as you would do, no doubt if you could travel there in body as we can, for you know that our histories are connected. Most of your scientists approach the riddle from the wrong perspective, their perspective. It is hardly of any consequence for them to think of going to a planet with half or less than half the gravity of their own planet, but what would they think of moving about on a planet with twice or even three times the gravity of their own? I believe they would think very much about it. As for the density of your atmosphere, my people has always needed breathing aids to assist them in this respect on your planet. Also, of late, we have been living in a form of self-contained bodysuit which has made my people a very much altered and further weakened race. However, due to our present living conditions, there is very little we can do about that. Turning to another sensitive subject, Xena suggested that the feminine side of the human race owes a lot of its early development to those first colonists and their interbreeding. The finer features of those early explorers have come out predominantly in the female offspring of their unions. Even to this day, Earth females show a higher rate of ambidexterity than do the males, as well as higher ability to work from instinct and intuition or sixth sense. Your young females also have an ability to concentrate and absorb knowledge at a faster rate. The tendencies towards self-preservation and non-aggression in Earth females are all traits of the Haven civilization, and even the feminine appearance is more of our kind than yours. Most of what Xena said sounded logical and made good sense, and started me thinking that there are indeed almost two distinct human races on Earth, the female and the male. The ironic twist to this whole theory seemed to be that Havener TMS people now needed more Earth male type attributes to help rebuild their race. At last there was a chance for more questions from my side of the ledger, and during this time Xena and I discussed our mutual love of the sea. Do you use your planeta TMS oceans for travel, as we do on Earth? I asked. No, not as you do. Maybe long ago in our past, but not now. We do, however, play about on it as you do, but that does not include swimming, just in craft, was her reply. Why don't you TMT you swim, I asked. In this suits. I do not think so. They are not compatible with complete submersion in water, Xena replied. What if you get caught in the rain? I quizzed. Rain we can deflect from our bodies, but solid water all about us removes us from contact with the energy source. This would not be a good thing, she replied. Can you elaborate on this energy source, please? I requested. Sorry, not at this time. This subject is a little sensitive to our people now, especially where Earth relationships are concerned, but not you, Alec, only your Earth military establishments, came her reply. I remember reading a report back on Earth that UFOs have been seen entering and exiting the sea. Could those craft sometimes be yours? Was my follow-up question. It is possible for our transporters to take many shapes to suit us. One of those shapes is indeed an underwater configuration. You may also wish to know that we can split our Earth atmosphere craft into more than one vehicle. You must understand, however, that what you are in now is not such a craft. For your own interest, if at some point in the future of your time on Earth you should see what is called a UFO, then it may be one of our craft if you see it divide by three or by five, with formations in the shape of a triangle, or if five craft are involved, you will see for sure a rectangle with always one craft in the center. This is the formation that so intrigued some of your ancient tribes and is called Aten Quincunxa TM, I believe. Xena then went on to mention something about an undersea grid network which allowed them to travel underwater with ease. Later, upon my return to Earth and after much diligent study on the UFO subject, I was surprised and delighted to find in one of Bruce Cathie's TMS books on Earth Harmonics and UFOs that there is almost irrefutable proof that some, if not all, alien spacecraft are plying our oceans and skies using an electromagnetic power grid system. This grid appears to surround our planet in a manner quite similar to the way one might wind up a ball of string. A very crude example of how this system might be tapped if its power is seen in the way old-style electric tram cars used overhead power lines to pick up electricity to run their electric motors. They did not need to carry the power source with them. They had only to reach up above and it was there. For a more detailed account of the Earth grid system, I suggest you read one of Bruce Cathie TMS many books on the subject. Chapter 9. The Arrival. I had already been told much about Haven and seen many pictures of it, but this was the real thing. First we had to pass around their sun, so it would still be some time before I could sight the planet. EATMD also been told well in advance to stock up on my liquid intake before this event took place, although, as with many other instructions throughout this entire experience, the reasons for doing so were a little harder to come by. I decided that now was the time to head for the drinks so I could be back in time to watch the big event. We completed our arc of the sun, and as we approached Xena TMS home planet it became visible in the three-dimensional viewer. There was confusion on my part at first as to what was Haven and what was not. For of all of the pictures of three-dimensional representations I had seen up until then, none showed Haven to be the junior partner in a twin planetary system. What a TMS more, EATMD not even been told that this was so. This was rather puzzling, but at the time I was more or less transfixed by the sight on the viewer before me and did not give it too much thought. I was seeing it all now, and that was not the only thing that counted for the moment. By a twin planetary system I mean that Haven looked to be a small planet in orbit around a much larger planet, perhaps similar to our Earth and its moon, but with the roles reversed. Haven seemed to have the water and some clouds, while the larger globe looked very much like our own moon, dry and barren. The only real difference seems to be that on Haven there was a predominance of blue, black seas and reddish, brown land, rather than the blues and green, browns mixed with abundant cloud cover as on Earth. Apparently the two planets orbit a single sun, somewhat similar in size to our Earth, a TMS sun but much older. This orbit or year takes approximately 2/3 of one Earth year, and the distance from Haven to its sun is a little less than from Earth to our sun day, even though Haven a TMS orbital trajectory around its sun is of a faster pace than that of Earth a TMS, its rotational speed is slower, or, in other words, its day is longer. Their days are divided into 12 segments, each of it being equal to approximately 4 of our Earth hours. This means they have a 48-hour day. As we got closer I could see that, although impressive in size, most of the land mass seemed to be desert, similar to the outback of Australia but much more severe. Xena had told me that most of it is uninhabitable, but it has not always been that way. As I understand it, most if not all of their development has occurred on the shores of their three main polar seas. At first this had the effect of splitting their population three ways, each group developing its own culture. They later found that by combining their knowledge they could make more rapid progress in all fields of endeavor. This is possibly why they have advanced to such a high level of accomplishment. Just before our descent to the Planeta TMS surface, it was suggested that I might like to return to the lower level viewing room, as the area we were in was to be cleared before we began landing approach procedures. The reason of this was never explained to me. It was not long before we descended through their atmosphere and I got my first sighting of Xena TMS hometown, Nepalese. Xena had given me a fairly extensive rundown of how the planet as a whole was run and governed. It sounded very simple, far simpler than anything on Earth, especially when you consider that this was the entire planet they were running, not just a country. Each major district, and there are three of these as I have explained before, elects 3 citizens to represent them on the High Council, making a total of 9 High Councillors, who are empowered to make all major decisions concerning the Planeta TMS well-being. Bi-yearly, a new councillor is elected in turn from one of the 3 districts and takes his, her place with the other 9. The councillor who has been standing the longest steps down and becomes a general overseer. This way there is a new council member every 2nd year and a constant flow of new ideas. No member can sit again once he has stepped down. So there is stability, and fresh ideas keep coming through. It works, and works well. Their progress as a people is proof of that. The cities are run on a similar basis, just a step or two below the general council. The first most striking thing about the city was its neatness and order, the second, its immensity. Even from well up I could not make out the boundaries. There may well be bigger cities on earth, but where I come from this place would be rated big, very big. It stretched out in both directions, following the coastline out of my line of sight. There seemed to be only a thin strip of land that was not coastland or desert, and the city was sandwiched within it. The last thing really to make an impact upon me was the lack of tall buildings, save for the odd tower or two, and the dominance of a small, circular shape among a few larger pyramid-shaped constructions. Hardly more than a minute had passed since we had entered the atmosphere, but now the craft was already settled. There was a mixture of apprehension and excitement within me. Now that I was here, wherever here was, just what had happened to me really started to sink in. Would I ever see home again? Was anyone looking for me there? What if I never made it back, ever? I had no idea what horrors might await me in this new land. My panic soon eased, however, and curiosity won the day. I eagerly scanned the viewer for my first close look at the alien landscape. I could see little of interest, and only at short distance as the viewer must have been at ground level. What I could see was an area of level ground, similar to a courtyard, leading to 2 pyramid-shaped buildings. They appeared to be made from a material that just looked like tinted glass or semi-transparent plastic. I couldn't quite see the apex of these buildings from my vantage point, but later I was to find that they were capped with a spiral tower or antenna arrangement. The height of the tower added approximately 25% to the building at TMS overall height. Each building in turn was topped with what I can only describe as a large light bulb. As peculiar as it may sound, I was sure I had seen something like this before, in the distant past. These bulbs glowed day and night, and upon closer inspection appeared to be of a net or mesh construction rather than being glass spheres. There appeared to be some form of electromagnetic grid or shielding device above the actual landing site, possibly a force field or energy gathering device. Variant of dwelling or house. Also 3-story high, hexagonal crystalline pattern within walls. Xena had earlier asked permission for me to stay with her family as a guest, and I was to wait on board until her duties were completed and then accompany her to her home. I still had no real idea of the external shape of the craft, apart from a suggestion much earlier on that was pyramidal. I was very eager to see for myself. Time passed, how much, I could not say. But at last I would have my chance. Xena was the only one who exited the craft with me, but I barely gave that a second thought for it was like stepping into a dream world. I forgot about the craft, for what caught my eye as I stepped outside was the sky. Even though it was broad daylight outside, the sky was almost black, or at least indigo. Only on the horizon could I see a streak of blue and orange. It was at this point that I remembered having been given what could only be described as sunglasses. They were more like wraparound goggles, but the instructions that went with them were, if the sun is out, wear these. No exception. I put them on. I had obviously been conditioned to haven a TMS gravity on board the transporter, for I felt no appreciable difference outside compared to what I had experienced inside the craft. The air was still and amazingly quiet. The surface upon which I was walking was not unlike cork, it appeared to be porous and slightly yielding underfoot. we made our way towards the buildings closer to us. Here we were fitted with new and totally different suits. According to Xena, this was always a necessary practice after dimensional flights in space.